Thursday night, it's time for Race Trackers. All the hype about Justify was, well, in a word, justified. He's now won both the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, and now looks to become a Triple Crown winner 2 weeks from now in the Belmont. I'm Bill Gottemer with my co-host, Bob Santamaze. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night. Hello, Bob.
Bill, how you doing?
A lot of action in the last 2 weeks. A lot of things have changed, right?
Well, it's always like the World Series of horse racing a bit. You know, with the exception of the Breeders' Cup, when we get into the Derby, we wait all winter for it, and then roll into the Preakness. Both races were exceptional, as you said. Justify was every. He met every bit of the hype that Bob Baffert and his followers laid out for him. He was unbelievable in the Derby, considering the pace he set, and extremely courageous in the Preakness, setting up what will be a very, very exciting Belmont with a very live chance to see another Triple Crown. Of course, great undercards for both the Derby and the Preakness, and a lot of really juicy racing. A little hampered by the weather, undoubtedly, but still, terrific couple of days, both in Baltimore and Churchill. And Bill, let me stop there. In terms of both the Derby and the Oaks, congratulations to you, as I believe you did have winter book bets on both Monomoy's Girl and Justify.
Yeah, thank you. I did. I had relatively nice bets on both of them in the winter book. And, you know, more than the money, it's nice to be able to identify an Oaks winner and a Derby winner, you know, further out. Now, granted, neither one of them were a stretch, but still, it's nice to do that. And, you know, Monomoy's Girl won the race, and I guess there was a foul claim that I guess everyone was in agreement should not have resulted in a disqualification, but it still made me nervous. whenever you have a winner and you see a foul claim, you have to take some concern.
Yeah, the right decision was made there. It did not. What kept Wonder to Godot from winning that race was Wonder Godot. She just could not get by Monomoy's Girl.
Right, and we've spoken about her on the show repeatedly about how she looks like a world beater, and then she just tends to hang. She tends to hang or to lean in on horses or lean away from horses. There are some horses who just find trouble, and she's one of them. You know, maybe with some maturing, she'll break that habit. But that helped me with Monomoy's Girl. Now Monomoy's Girl skipped the Black Eyed Susan. I assume we'll see her, you know, on the Belmont undercard. But that remains to be seen.
You know, Bill, I thought I had heard, as I could be wrong, she's a Canadian bred. I think she's running in the Queen's Plate.
Oh, that might be. Oh no, it's who are we talking about? Monomoy's Girl or Wonder Godot?
No, I'm sorry, Wonder Godot.
Right, I think that's right. She is a Canadian bred. She will be. I think she is running up there in that. But I assume we'll see Monomoy's Girl kind of continue on the 3-year-old trail,
yes.
Probably on the Belmont undercard, I would hope. Let's talk about Justify a little bit. It's amazing how things change, right? And we're lucky enough. We're going to have Mike Smith on. Join us at 9:00 for all of our listeners. So that's really happy about that. We'll get his opinion on Justify and things Triple Crown related. You go back 2 weeks ago, and everyone was in agreement that top to bottom, this was one of the most talented Kentucky Derby fields we'd seen in a generation,
yeah.
or two decades. And I think that was echoed by Jerry Bailey rather forcefully on the NBC telecast. And Justified dispatched that whole field with a certain amount of aplomb. Now he wins the Preakness and revisionist history. People are starting to say, well, who did he beat? And I guess the question is, you know, the answer is he beats everybody he runs against. But what seems to be so amazing about him, and I want to get Mike Smith's opinion on this later on, is he seems to be so tractable that if you need him to hustle out of the gate and be on the lead, which I think there was the right decision in both races, given the track conditions, he seems to do it. But he seems like he's able to wait, and he's not speed crazy either. That will give him a big advantage at Belmont, where listening to a rider's cue is so important getting a mile and a half.
Correct. And that tractability is a little unique for he's just a massive specimen. You know, a lot of times a huge horse like that is just this one run bull, but he's very nimble, very athletic, very tractable. And Bill, listen, at the head of the lane of the Derby, when he put away Bolt Doro for about a half a second, I thought he was going to draw up and win by like 10. Now, great courage and ability by Good Magic in both races, and Audible also, you know, ran very credibly in the Derby. But, you know, as we said earlier, all the hype, again, very justified with this horse. This horse is every bit as good and maybe more talented than American Pharaoh, who was the last Triple Crown winner we saw a few years ago.
Well, I mean, what you are going to see is whether or not the so many races in a short period of time will take its toll. And you really won't know.
Right.
Back to the track today, you really won't know for another 10 days or so, and you may not know until the last, you know, the last 70 yards of the Belmont. I guess the horses who are laying in wait, Todd Pletcher has a few laying in wait. Todd Pletcher's record in the Belmont is outstanding.
Yes.
It's a home track for him, and he has the advantage of skipping the Preakness. I guess there is some controversy because Audible and My Boy Jack also have some common ownership with Justify, and there's some question as to whether they would be willing to try to derail Justify's Triple Crown bid with one of their own horses, and that's too bad. I mean, that is one of the – we've spoken on the show about the handful of super trainers. It seems like now we're having a handful of super owners, and they're combining forces. You don't really have that rivalry that you used to have with different ownership groups. It seems like the ownership groups are now kind of all mixed. Everybody takes a little piece of everybody else's horse, and the sport is probably worse for it, I would think.
Yeah, it sounds like Todd Pletcher wants to run Audible, but that the ownership group is hesitant for the reasons you outlined. You know, why get in the way of a chance at history with Justify. My Boy Jack, it sounds like the connections are pointed towards Turf, the Belmont Derby, in early July.
Right, and as we've stated, the world's, you know, the worst named race you could possibly come up with. But yeah, they will be going towards grass, and that's probably a wise decision on their part. It's $1 million, so you can't criticize anybody for going that way, and it gives them a little more time. I guess there are rumors out there that Justify's breeding rights have been sold for $60 million, but yet the owners of Justify have put out a statement in the last half hour saying that's not done yet. And they're saying that, you know, they continue to, there's a lot of inquiries and they're continuing to work on it. But my guess is you will see his breeding rights sold, you know, for some number around that, probably be before the Belmont, I would guess. And that's, again, that's a trend that has taken too many stars out of the, you know, out of the racing arena much too quickly.
Yeah. Going back, God, remember we had with Secretariat. Conquistador Cielo,
right,
where the numbers were huge, and they just, you know, the economics for kind of force ownership to stop after the 3-year-old year. So we'll just have to wait and see. Enjoy him while we can. We'll see him in a couple of weeks at Belmont, hopefully up at Saratoga, and then we'll see beyond that in the Breeders' Cup.
Right. Well, you know, we spoke about the decision of the owners of American Pharoah to retire him after the third three-year-old year, and we spoke about how he could have been considered one of the greatest of all times by having a knockout 4-year-old campaign. And at the time, people, I guess, thought that American Pharoah wouldn't be eclipsed anytime soon because it had been so long, and maybe he won't be. But it just goes to show you how fame is fleeting, and maybe the owners are justified, you know, would, if they could, be better served by trying to have a 4-year-old campaign. You know, but again, we'll see. All of it depends on how the horse comes out and, as you say, the economics of the whole matter. I want to talk about something. In 3 minutes, we're going to have Joe Bravo call, and we're going to congratulate him on his being awarded the Venezia Trophy, and we'll have a good conversation with him in a few minutes. Bob, I want to compliment you on pointing out that the 14 post in the Derby was loaded first, and Mendelsohn would stand there a long time. And while that, I don't know if that was responsible for the trouble Mendelsohn had. Mendelsohn had a horrendous trip out of the 14 post. And a lot of it seems to be, this is a couple of years in a row now, the 14 post has gotten sawed off by the horses from the outside gate. And I'm going to make it, I think Racetrackers hereby is making a suggestion or a demand that Churchill Downs invest in a gate that can hold 20 horses. You know, the idea that a race that has, you know, a couple hundred million dollars bet on it, would have two gates and have that gap between the first gate and the second gate, which inevitably leads to a running start, so to speak, for the horses on the outside coming at the horse on the 14 post. Those days should probably end. If it's not for racing fans, it should be the safety of the riders. I think that's something that we're going to, maybe we'll even be brave enough to ask Mike Smith about it later.
Bill, if I could tell you, almost up until the post time of the Derby, I had people texting me on how Mendelsohn was the hot horse and they loved him for that race. He ran like every other Dubai shipper has run. You know, I understand we may see him later in the year, some of the 3-year races on the dirt. I don't know, Monmouth or New York. But, he was so well thought of going into that race. He had trouble and did not run a lick.
Right. I mean, but his trouble was pretty severe. I mean, I wouldn't take that as being indicative of his talent at all. I mean, I think the trouble was bad enough. What was interesting was his trainer, Aidan O'Brien, speaking about how surprised he was about the carnival atmosphere at the Derby. And it's hard for me to believe that anyone who's been as big in the game as he has, you know, isn't aware that the Kentucky Derby is a circus. You know, leading up to and during and after. And then he expressed a lot of surprise at that. And I guess that goes to show you again the real value of people who've been in this situation before.
Yes.
You know, Bob Baffert comes to mind, and Mike Smith comes to mind. People who've been through that circus and aren't surprised by anything. But I was surprised that he felt surprised.
I heard Baffert say after the Derby that the walk from the stable area to the saddling area, the paddock, is just become lunacy. And people get too close to the horses, and it's just a wild and unruly. Now, he's been through this multiple times, and he's saying it's getting a bit out of hand. So, to your point, and you made this point a number of times over the winter when discussing Boldoro, it just helps to have that added experience throughout the entire chain of command with the horse, you know, whether it's groom, jockey, trainer, assistant trainer, that just knows the ropes of that day because it's extremely unique and extremely challenging.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, it's unique. You know, if you haven't been through it before, you haven't been through it before, and there's no way to prepare for it. Bob, with that, I'm so pleased to have announced we have Joe Bravo on the line, and I'd like to welcome him in.
Hello, guys.
Hello, Joe. Welcome to Racetrackers.
Hey, guys. Nice to have on tonight. How are you doing?
All right, Joe, we're just talking about the madness surrounding the Derby and the Preakness, and you know, and how difficult it is on humans and horses, and how you know, how just how insane the entire setup can be, and you know, just what an added factor that is to riding in a big race.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the race is probably the easiest part. It's getting to it is. And getting to it with the same mind is probably the hardest part.
Right. I guess it's like any big event. But before we get into any of that, I want to welcome you so much. And you know, you need no introduction for any of our fans, but we'll do it anyway. You know, Joe Bravo, you've been a veteran rider now for two decades. You have almost 30,000 starts, 5,000 winners, almost $170 million in earnings, and you've become a leading rider at a number of different tracks over the years we want to talk about, but the real honor that you have this weekend coming up is you're this year's recipient of the Mike Venezia Award, so congratulations on that.
Well, thank you very much. No, I'm very honored to be able to get that. I mean, anytime you get voted in by your peers, the people that you work with, hey, that's my competition. It's a pretty nice feeling. It's been a great road. I'm just real thankful to have some good people around us, and most of all, good horses around us.
Right. Well, I mean, you're being too humble, because the honor, as you said, the Venezia Award is granted by your peers and by fans. But it's really the person who exemplifies extraordinary sportsmanship and citizenship. And there's no higher honor than to be thought of as a sportsman and a good citizen and just an all around, you know, good guy. And congratulations on that. It's a long time coming, and I know. I guess this year they've moved it up, and the award will be given out on Memorial Day. Is that what I gather?
Yes. I think they said after, like, the third race there on Monday. So it's nice. I mean, I'm really thankful. And ever since it was announced, I mean, I've been getting phone calls. And like I said, I rode from East Coast, West Coast, and it showed the phone calls that came in from coast to coast this week. It's really overwhelming, and it just makes you feel good inside. I'm very thankful.
That's great. I mean, Bob, you of course you know, and Joe, you know, but for some of our younger listeners, Mike Venezia was a staple rider on the New York circuit, and he was tragically killed in a race at Belmont in 1988. And you know, that was a pretty dark day in New York racing, and you know, it's nice that he's remembered for his citizenship and his sportsmanship.
Yeah, Bill, he was a class act. I mean, all you heard was high praises from his riding, not just the skills, the way he conducted himself on and off a horse. I mean, so this award does mean a lot to me just for that.
Yeah, Bill, I was actually fortunate enough, 25, in the late 70s, to be on a backstretch softball team that Mike sponsored called the Venezia Colts. So I got to meet him a few times, and just as Joe says, he's absolute gentleman, super friendly. You know, we were nobodies, you know. We were just a bunch of young kids he put together with some folks to play against the grooms and the pinks and et cetera. And he could not have been nicer. And you're right, Bill, it was a very sad day, you know, when he tragically passed due to the accident on the racetrack. And Joe, it just speaks very highly of your calendar, of your character, that you were given this award, because he was a really good guy.
Thank you. No, I couldn't disagree with you more. I mean, he was a class act, and it's nice that they keep doing this award for year after year. I mean, and the people that got voted in for it in the past riders that's got voted in for it, it's pretty cool, and I hope it keeps going for another 100 years, because Mike deserves it.
Absolutely. Speaking of your career has become a bit of an elder statesman. You now become a big time rider. Not that you always weren't, but it seems like your career has changed a little bit. I remember years ago you would ride a number of horses for Benny Perkins, and it'd be a lot of speed horses. And now you've shown the versatility. You're riding some long distance grass races. You find a niche kind of in almost every area. How have things changed for you over the years, and what do you do to continue to stay in the shape to ride?
Well, thanks for acknowledging that. Yeah, as you said, Ben Perkins did have a lot of sprinters. I mean, horses teach you everything. At the time when I was younger, I was riding for a lot of the Jersey guys coming up, and there were known speed horses, and that's what you get staple for, because that's what you rode. I went on through the last years. I've been riding a lot of races for Christopher Clement, and he's known for turf racing because he had turf horses. Well, I was riding for him, and that's what kind of taught you. It teaches the horses teach you what really you need to do, and they carry you along and make you look good. Now, the ones that aren't so good, they might not make you look like a star out there. the horses really teach you everything, and it's just really the horsemen that really bring them along. You'll see owners before they have a horse develop, and they'll look, and they try to staple it like people that's had those type of horses. They kind of like bring it along because they know what the experience. In this game, it's experience. The horse is really going to have the ability or not, but when a guy's been dealing with turf horses for a long time, they kind of know what to do. And same thing for riders. I'm just blessed to be able to get them type of horses now.
Right. Well, clearly you've become a go-to rider in a number of different areas with your agent, Jimmy Riccio, helping you, placing you in the right spot. You've been leading rider. Well, tell us where you've been leading rider. I know it's at least been Monmouth and Fairgrounds and in New York. You seem to have, over the years, taken the attack a number of different places.
Yeah, I mean, home is New Jersey, and that's where I got a lot of leading rider titles. So, I mean, but to be honest with you, I'm older now, as you said. I'm not going to ride 10 races a day. Physically, it just can't. And you have to kind of look for the better horses, and them are the ones. This sounds bad, but I want to be on TV. I want a big horse. I want a horse that takes you to places. I mean, it's fun to go travel around with good horses. As I say that, you lose kind of your everyday business. I mean, if you want to follow a good horse, you're going to have to take off on that Saturday to go, and you take off a lot of mounts, so your everyday business kind of takes a step back, you know? But you have to simple mind, think of it yourself. What do you want? Like I said, put me on TV. I want the good horses. It's always a pleasure to deal with them, you know. We work hard every day to try to find those.
One of those good horses is Synchrony, who ran a very, very credible third on Derby Day and on Churchill Downs. Do you know the next step with Synchrony? Might we see him in the Manhattan on Belmont Day? Any ideas what the next step is with that very talented turf horse?
Yeah, Mike Stidham and all, we just had dinner the other night with Hillary, and there looks like they're going to try to go and point the big stars going for the Arlington Million, but it's up to them. I mean, I shouldn't be saying in the South, they're the trainers, but that's what looks like the future. They're going to try to go to Arlington Million, so they'll probably look for a Chicago race, find a nice little race in between then, and point it out. They'll find a nice road for him. He's a very talented horse. Guys, you remember the Derby. Have you ever seen so much rain? I mean, it just really was against us that afternoon. And, I mean, he's got so much heart that he fought through it. I mean, but I've been riding a long time, and I haven't rode a turf course probably that deep in America in a long time. The will to win, the horse fought through it all, and he's going to have a great summer.
Well, I guess it's funny that you bring that up, you know, because the turf course at Pimlico 2 weeks later was as bad, if not worse. and I guess one of the things that shocked me was one of the stats, and I can't vouch for this being true, but this is what I read, that there's been 42,000-mile grass races run in the U.S. and Canada since 1991, I think. And the grass race on Friday that the Chad Brown's horse won, Pimlico Friday, was the sixth slowest of all those 40,000 races.
Yeah, it's a little tough when you try to get through that type of ground. You know, it shows a real horse with character. They have to have the will to win.
Yeah, I think they said the other five were at Kentucky Downs, which no one really believes is an actual mile. They said they think it's longer than a mile, and I think it happens to be uphill most of the way or something. But yeah, it's not often that you get to ride in that type of weather on a deep turf course, at least in the U.S. I guess it does skew everything, but I assume it tires horses out pretty quickly.
Yeah, if you ever ride onto a beach, that'll give you a little bit of insight. It's deep. I mean, the horses really, you know, some horses get through it well, and others don't. They're all animals. They're trying.
You know, Joe, we're thinking about some of the horses, the great horses we've ridden through the years, and the one that Bob and I think probably, not that we ever rooted against you, but the one who continued to continued to surprise us and continued to go on was AP Indian. It looked to me every time that he had – it looked to me like he was all out every time, and I always expect the next time he wouldn't have much left, and didn't he surprise us every time? He must have been a real hard-trying gelding for you.
Yeah, this is a horse that just loved to win. You put him next to another animal, he's just going to do what he had to do. He had some really good matchups with another great sprinter, Liberal Limousine, and they both kind of knocked heads a couple times. And, man, AP was just a talented horse that knew what he had to go do. Really what made him a better horse in his later years was he thought about it. He was early on a really fast horse, and he didn't breathe too well. He started sitting off the pace, and he'd look at horses, and he would go and chase them down, kind of almost like a turf horse would, just to kind of have a target. And he saved himself, and he did what he had to do. He put it on the line, and his stats showed he was a great one.
Yeah, I mean, Bob, how many times did we think we had him? I remember one time at Belmont, I guess
yes.
There was a Kieran McLaughlin horse for Godolphin, who I can't remember his name escapes me, but I thought was going right by him, and he fought back. He fought back, as you said, gamely once with the horse right next to him.
Got to respect those Godolphin blue silks. When anytime you hook them down the lane, you better be ready. They're pretty amazing.
Yeah, they got a lot going for them, I guess, right? The Godolphin silks,
yes.
And the Godolphin training methods, and the Godolphin no cost, no expense too much, no cost
that's
spare.
Years and years of bloodlines there. When you turn for home, you better remember it and respect
them. Well, Joe, I see you riding more and more now for Chad Brown, and it seems that Chad Brown has. It's just an endless supply of horses. I mean, I don't really know how many he has. We've had him on the show. We'll have to ask him sometime, but it's got to be approaching, I don't know, 300, you know, in training at some point, or 250. But that's a perfect. I see you have a big weekend riding Chad Brown horses over at Monmouth. So that's a home turf for you.
Yeah, I was really blessed to be able to sit on one of his Eclipse Award winning horses. You remember a little horse called Big Blue Kitten?
Yes,
I think Chad
absolutely.
Trained him. Yeah, he was a lot of fun. I mean, he won grade ones all over the East Coast, and he teaches you a lot, a horse like that. I remember one of the first times I rode him, Chad says, he's the type of horse, you don't have to tell him what to do, just kind of show him. He'll take you to the target. And when I mean target, he just knew where he had to do, and turn for home, all you had to do was point him wherever you needed him to go, and man, what an impressive turn of foot.
I kind of remember him always trying to run by another Ramsey horse. There seemed to be always uncoupled entries in there, and it was, Big Blue Kitten was just, really just, as you said, a real game trier. Well, what are your plans over the summer? Is there summer to ride New Jersey, New York, maybe Saratoga? Do you have a plan mapped out yet?
I got luggage.
Okay. Okay.
a lot of traveling. I'm based out in New York and New Jersey both. Yes. Matter of fact, I'm in New York right now as we speak. But a lot of travel. I'll go to Saratoga and live there for the meet. But when you hang your hat at Saratoga, it's where the best are at. And they ship out of town a lot. And I try to kind of be flexible to ride the better races that way. And you keep your ear at the track and you see who's training good and who's not. And this game kind of turned into a game of chess. There's so many graded stake races around the country, and it's about placing them, really. And that's what Chad Brown and all the top guys really, I take my hat off to them. They're amazing. They really know where their horses fit. I mean, these guys, their numbers show for themselves, but it's a lot of homework. Like I say, it's like playing chess. You got to place them in the right spot, and then the horse will kind of shine through at the end of the year. But, everybody kind of leads up and tries to use all those prep races leading up to the Breeders' Cup. And it makes it a lot of fun. You get to be able to bounce around
right.
different states.
There's plenty of opportunity.
And you know, it's just kind of developing the horse till the end of the year.
You know, it's funny. We speak on this show, all the time on this show, but everywhere in horse racing, people speak about how, you know, these horses these days don't run as often or aren't as durable as horses in the past. But I always counter with the fact that, you know, in the olden days, air travel wasn't early enough, it didn't even exist. But even until the late really 80s, it wasn't feasible for horses. And you ran against, a lot of times you ran against the same horses you'd run against a number of times. So it wasn't that impressive that you ran every 3 weeks because you were running against the same horses. I guess now, as you point out, if there's a horse anywhere in the world that's eligible and in shape for $1 million or a $700,000 purse, they'll get there. And I think that's what makes it so difficult now, that if your horse isn't on the exact top of his game, you can be well assured somebody else's will.
And developing the horses through the years. I mean, you keep hitting the same horses every day. And you know what? They're probably getting beat by that same horse all the time. Their confidence level is such a big thing. You could fix a horse's legs. You could fix a horse's breathing. But until you get the horse's confidence level winning, it means a lot. And that's why if you could ship them out, set them to maybe a smaller track, but still a stake race, and you get them winning a couple races and get their confidence level back, man, then you could come back and hit a grade one race. And their confidence level, maybe before when they were hitting them grade one horses, got knocked down a little bit, they could come back and face them later in the year, and it's like a different story and different results.
Well, that's so true, Bob, right? We spoke about this, and Bob, I want to get your thoughts. We spoke about this, Joe, before the Derby. It seems to be conventional wisdom now, at least from people, you know, on Twitter, but that if you qualify for the Derby, you're duty-bound to go. And I guess if I'm ever lucky enough to have a horse that's just a cut below Derby caliber, I don't think I'll be enticed to go, because I'd like to save him for where he belongs and see if he can develop. You know, right, Bob? We've spoken about that.
And listen, there's, I think a lot of the smarter connections sometimes realize if I wait and pick things up in June, July, there's a lot of money to be made in some of these, you know, middle range derbies, whether it's the Ohio Derby, whether it's Indiana, or, you know, there's just, if you feel you're just a cut below, if you place your horse correctly, you can make an awful lot of money in the summer of a three-year-old year.
That's very true. I do agree with you guys, but a lot of us go to bed sleeping and dreaming at different things.
Of the Derby.
A lot of people's dreams is the Kentucky Derby. Like I said earlier, I like being on the making it to the big show, and that's what a lot of owners' dreams are about,
yeah,
is making it to the big show. And you know, that first Saturday in May, anything can happen. I mean, it really, it's a horse race. I mean, it's nice to see good horses like Justified come in there and undefeated and go on and do what he's been doing. It's amazing. But those guys didn't enter just to say, hey, I was there. You know, I mean, their thoughts and, you know, they have a game plan going in there, each individual, those 20 horses, with a different way to try to get to that winner's circle. And I respect that.
Right. Well, I guess that the trend now towards mega cards in racing, I guess it's an economic trend, and it's probably a trend that's here to stay because the big cards have so much success. It does deplete the other weekends. I mean, I still associate Memorial Day with the Met Mile, and I guess I look at the card coming up this weekend and I'm somewhat disappointed. But I guess Joe, for the excitement of everybody involved, you know, that those big days are worth depleting the other cards, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we got to look at the I hate to bring in like something negative at the horse racing game, but there's a shortage of horses. For what reason? I can't pinpoint it. But if you look, there's just not as many fall crops as today. I guess the breeders can't breed as many horses, but I hate to bring up a point, but these two-year-old in training sales, these breezes, what do you really prove going 10 for an eighth mile? What's that going to prove? I think it's a little bit too early for those two-year-olds to be doing that much work, and you lose a lot of horses throughout injuries and everything else by pushing them to kind of do that fast and that quick of a pace for that young of an animal. If they gallop, you're going to be able to see the same stride. You're going to be able to see it. And you're not pushing that horse to that much stress. You want to see stress. Them horses are pushed to the limit to try to break that 10. And what is really that tell you? He could go an eighth of a mile? Well, shit, the shortest he's going to run is 6 furlongs.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I think you're going to be able to save a lot of horses and have them down the road if they just didn't push them so early on.
There's that has become a trend, and I guess I saw it. Even we saw the workout. It was a Medaglia d'Oro Colt. I think that sold 2 year old. It sold for $1.2 million, I think. But you know, he went an eighth of a mile and ten and one or 10 and 2. What he, as you say, I didn't realize it until I saw how full out he was. You know, he was whipping and driving, and it was doing everything possible to get that extra speed into him to get in the 10 range. And you're right, it can't be. You know, I guess historically it doesn't work out. Most of those horses who come out of that race either need to be developed in the 3 year old year anyway. So it's I agree. The shortage of horses is a real worry.
If there's any way they could just, you know, slow him down, there's no reason to do an eighth. You know, let him gallop through the lane, 2 minute lick. You'll be able to see the same stride. You'll be able to see the same animal in performance, but not push to the limit. There's no reason to have them all out at that early of an age. And I just think it'll end up in, we'll have more horses to race when it comes to the racing age, you know? Just kind of common knowledge, I would think. I mean, it does bring a big number when they go 10, but, man, I don't know. I'd just like to see him last a little longer than 2 year olds.
Yeah, it's U.S. racing. It's still kind of a speed game, and they want to realize return on that investment early. So they want the early speed to win as a 2 year old. And you're right, Joe. And that and to perhaps the detriment of future development.
Yeah, we just have a lot more horses. I mean, if you notice now, you'll see Belmont only have 8 races of the day. I mean, there's a lot. There's a shortage out there. It's a problem, and we just got to try to find every mean. That's not a one-all serve all the two-year-old training sales. That's not. I mean, we need more horses out there. You know, and
no,
if somebody says horse
racing's
not, and horse racing says they're not live. Look, they just set a record in a broodmare. What was it? $115 million went through the auction there. I think Manny Pope spent almost $10 million on one. There's horse racing in. The horse racing's live. They're breaking records every day when it comes to handle. You just need the horse's flesh out there.
You know, Bill, is it too few horses, or are there more tracks than there ever were before?
I think the fall crop is down. I think the fall crop continues to plummet, and I mean at one point I think it, at its apogee I think it was 40,000 a year, and I think now it's down to like 21. I think I don't know if that's
correct. I didn't realize that.
And I really do. I take my hat off to all the breeders out there. I mean, they bring them around. That's what really makes the horse racing game alive. I mean, that's just the beginning of it all. It's elementary school.
I mean, one radical idea, and Joe, sometimes on the show we think of things that are out of the box, and sometimes we get criticized for things that will never happen, but it's really a show just for discussion purposes. But you know, maybe the claiming game has run its course. You know, I mean, if you too often, if a horse has a small problem, you know, the temptation is to get rid of them through the claiming ranks, as opposed to spending the time to bring them back or let them heal. And you know, with a dwindling crop, you know, if you couldn't get out through the claiming ranks, and you had to kind of reclaim horses, you might see more 5-year-old, 6-year-old geldings running rather than running themselves into the ground. But you know, clearly there's some, you know, some step has to be made to either have fewer racing or more horses bred, or just accept smaller fields. And you know, the small fields are I don't think it's true racing.
Well, they just need to put maybe a bonus out there for breeders to try to get some more horses out there. I mean, the claiming game is great for a lot of different levels. There's a lot of people that love racing that can't really go and do it, you know, the $1 million way, and they have to start somewhere, and hopefully they're a little bit of luck that claimer can turn into a stake horse one day. I mean, so there's so many different aspects of the game. We just putting our 2 cents in, and hopefully we get some great racing in the future.
Yeah, exactly. Now, one thing I want to ask you about, you refer to yourself as you've been referred to as Jersey Joe, and you made big waves at Monmouth for many, many years. Is there excitement down there, or is there fear down there at Monmouth over the sports gambling decision and the imminent addition of that to the Monmouth track?
I guess it depends who you ask. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty because it's never happened before. There's never been sports betting before. It breaks my heart, though, to see racetracks like not Monmouth Car Course, but Chicago and many other tracks that are kind of falling aside that are gorgeous. I mean, if you go there to Chicago or to Monmouth Park on a Saturday or Sunday, you're going to see 20,000 people. I mean, a family atmosphere of kids coming up. And I mean, it's really great. See it going down only 2 days a week racing hurts. So hopefully this sports betting brings a little notoriety to racing to the general public that wouldn't go to races. And that's what I think they're hoping for. A guy going to bet the New York Jets kind of finds a pony in between the bet on and falls in love with the game and it builds up from there. But for the certainty, nobody right now. Nobody, it's never happened before. We don't know. I do take my hat off to Dennis. Dennis Drazen has done an amazing job, I do got to say. I mean, for him to do this fight for almost 7 years now, to bring it to the point that it's at, you got to shake his hand.
Well, he took it to the Supreme Court and won, so there's no bigger legal victory than to win at that
amazing.
Level.
Yes, that's amazing.
Well, I guess, Joe, as a Jet fan, I would say that it's probably good for racing that anybody who goes and bets on the Jets, they'll immediately turn towards betting on racing shortly thereafter.
At least after the game.
That's funny.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, this has been great. I'm so happy you came on, and we really want to just congratulate you on this award. And it's such a special one. Given who it's named after, and given what it stands for, and we're proud to have you on, and we hope you'll come back anytime to talk about any topic you'd like.
Guys, I really do appreciate it. I mean, I'm not just a jockey. This is my life. I mean, I live for it. You know, if you go look at me on a Monday or Tuesday, I'm sitting here watching TVG during the day at any level racing. It is my life. I love it. I mean, so I'm just going to try to do whatever we can to make this game better, and that's what I'm here for. That's all.
Excellent. Well, Joe Bravo, everyone. Thanks so much, Joe, and good luck this weekend. Good luck in the rest of the year.
Keep up the great work, guys. Thank you.
That's great. That was a fun conversation, right?
You know, Bill, having done this with you now for a couple of months, it never ceases to amaze me when we have these high-profile guests from the industry, just how accommodating and generous with their time and information they are. He's a great guy. I could see why he got this award. He just seems like a wonderful person, and his career speaks for itself. Listen, I used to go to Monmouth with some frequency because, you know, I'm very good friends with Ted Kosciusko. I used to train down there. Good friends with Phil Gleaves. He used to train down there. So I was down there a great deal in the 80s and 90s. And guy, he owned a track down there. He was, you know, it was like Angel in New York back in the 70s and 80s. So not only a really good guy, but a very, very accomplished professional rider.
No, absolutely. And it's refreshing for some. I mean, it's, everybody looks at it a little differently. But, you know, we've had some riders on, some athletes who say, you know, everything's the same. You know, you focus on your the job, and you don't like all the hype around it. Joe Bravo was pretty clear right there. No, he loves the big days. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's that's what you want to be. You want to be,
yep.
You want to be right in the middle of it. And it's it's funny. Well, I hope Monmouth does survive. You know, I posed a question on Twitter, and I got some people thinking I was kidding around, but I guess, you know, with the horizontal betting that we see in horse racing, do you think we'll see, or do you think there'd be a market for a combination horizontal bet that including a sports game? So four races and two football games, or four races and a baseball game and a basketball game. Do you foresee someday someone does that type of pick six?
Bill, could you have foreseen 5 years ago the whole Betfair. Well, no, it was in Europe. I shouldn't say the whole Betfair concept of locking in on your price. Listen, I would say never say never. Of course, these things could develop over time. And, you know, look at the Super Bowl bets. You can bet on anything. You bet on the coin flip, the length of time for the national anthem. It'll start in Vegas for sure, that type of horizontal concept. But I think if somebody is willing to put some money on it, somebody will invent the wager view. And I think that's absolutely possible.
Right. Well, I mean, look at the Rainbow Six. The Rainbow Six is something that I never would have thought would have been a success. And I guess it's been explained to me that the temptation for people to reach for the stars, so to speak, by picking the most unlikely pick six ticket to be a sole winner, that all those people chasing that makes the value on the regular pick six even higher than a regular pick six, even taking into consideration the 30% skim for the jackpot. Mm-hmm. And I guess I wouldn't have thought that through. I would have thought that was a gimmick that would have been rejected by serious pick six players, and I guess I was wrong. So I guess at some point you can see, you know, some combination of sports / horse betting. Although I am concerned for the game that there's only so many dollars to go around in people's pockets, and if someone's betting a football game at the track, that's money that's not being churned through the window for those races.
You know, Bill, I could be wrong here. I think if you're inclined to, you know, bet football, baseball, basketball games, you can bet them today. Right. Fact that now it's going to be in a more available forum at parlors, at maybe racetracks, etc. I don't know that someone who didn't bet on those games in the past is necessarily going to start playing them heavy going forward simply because there's now the betting, the parlor availability in a racino or a racetrack or whatever. I still think there's red handicapping is the amount of information that is available that allows you to digest and make an informed or not so informed decision on that race, where, you know, if it's casino gambling or if it's sports betting, you know, you don't handicap a sports team the way you do a horse race. At least I don't. So
no, right, of course, it's not nearly as complex.
I think it's two separate types of wager, and I don't necessarily see one affecting the other.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't see much synergy in it either, so I really don't. But I guess as you point out, you can always make a sports bet. It's not hard to figure out how to do it illegally or quasi-legally. But I guess the more people speak about it, that might generate more interest in it. You know, legality does bring about open discussion. So if people are talking about it now on the telecast, people may think about it. I do want to mention a gambling matter that towards that end, it seems like all the proposals for legalized sports gambling talk about a takeout that's higher than the illegal takeout that's been around for, 200 years. So I question whether or not they're even going to siphon any of that off, because no one's going to pay extra for the privilege to do something legally when it works just fine the way it is now.
I heard they want to charge some type of an integrity fee or something like that, which, it's a nice name just to skim off the top. But
call it what you want. Yeah. It's extra money going out of your pocket. Which brings me up to, I had the pleasure of going to Panama on business recently, and the hotel I stayed in had a casino, and I played blackjack, and I bought $40 worth of chips, and when I cashed in my $80 worth of chips, there was a 5.5% cashing fee, which it had nothing to do with winning or losing. It was a cashing fee on the cashing in chips. That's probably the worst gambling tax that I've experienced myself. You know, I was taken aback by it. Yes.
Not to radically change the topic of discussion here, but I did want to bring this up to you before Mike comes on. Did you see that Naira hired a new racing secretary for Belmont?
I did, and I don't know what that means. To be honest with you, I don't know if it's replacing Martin Panzer or reporting to Martin Panzer. It was unclear. Did you read anything further?
It is unclear. Martin Panzer will still write the book for Saratoga.
Okay.
But I believe the gentleman's name is Pat Pope, and he's coming from Oaklawn, and he also handles Prairie Meadows. He will handle the tail end of the Belmont meet and then pick it up again in the fall.
You know, that's interesting. I mean, over the years they've had separate racing secretaries for Aqueduct, I believe, and who reported to Martin Panzer. I mean, I don't envy anyone taking that job, because as Joe said and we pointed out, there's a shortage of horses, and it just doesn't seem to matter what they do, they can fill fields.
It's been the worst this year that I can ever remember it with the fields.
And you wonder, I mean, you know, this might be controversial, but you wonder whether enough attention is being focused on it. There's a number of factors. I guess the workers' comp in New York State is much more expensive than other places, so it drives people out. The New York racing doesn't have the luster that it once had. But you wonder how many efforts are being pointed towards redevelopment of the Belmont area and more real estate matters than it is for the sport itself. And I'm not criticizing. It's just you can only do so many things at once. So you just wonder whether it's a combination of all those things. But you're right. The idea that they can't run on a Wednesday in May at Belmont, or that they can't card more than 8 races on a card in New York in the spring, you know, even 5 years ago would be thought of to be impossible to believe.
Yep. Yep. It's like everyone just gears up for Belmont Stakes weekend, those turf races they run in early July, and then they wait for Saratoga.
Right. I will add, Bob, our request for credentials from New York Racing Association were rejected. So I don't know why, but they were summarily rejected. There was no explanation. So I've asked for an explanation. Maybe I didn't fill out the form right, or maybe they just don't like us. They don't know us, or whatever.
They're not as accommodating as Keeneland, then, huh? Okay.
No, not nearly as accommodating as Keeneland. Keeneland continues to lead the Pimlico had given us credentials last year. I didn't get them this year. I got them last year. This year I had a lot of fun down there despite the fact that the weather was bad. Baltimore is always a fun city. It's just a lively place, and the food is tremendous, and I always like the people.
Yes.
And it's a really good weekend down there. But this year the weather was miserable almost right till the end. But somehow we managed to avoid even getting caught in the rain.
I hope you had a crab cake or two. My brother lives down there. I've been down there numerous times. It's a great city. Now, listen, you wonder about the future of the Pimlico facility. But listen, there's a lot of history down there in terms of racing, and I hope it's able to continue.
The Pimlico facility is so old. And now they've done away with any pretense of letting you see the race. You know, the infield is now, I mean, they might as well just build a giant wall there. You know, they might as well build the 40-foot wall that's been talked about. Just I mean, even the television cameras can't see around it. But see around it or over it, the stuff in the infield. So it almost has everything going against it except for, as you said, tradition and a certain amount of charm in how difficult it is to spend a day there.
But again, you know, Maryland Racing, which at one time was Pimlico, Bowie, and Laurel, which was maybe like the third biggest circuit in the U.S. at one time. And now, you know, who knows where it stands?
Right.
You know, look at the great riding stars that have come out of there, whether it was Ramon Dominguez,
The McCarrans.
Edgar Prado, the McCarrans, exactly.
Absolutely, it's got a long illustrious history. Before we call Mike, we have a couple of minutes. I want to call Mike at 9 o'clock. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit. There's been some criticism of Jose Ortiz's ride on Good Magic in the Preakness, and the major criticism seemed to come from Chad Brown. You know, maybe he was a little disappointed in defeat. So we'll give him that. But once that horse from John Service didn't go, once Jose Ortiz broke well, and the way that track was playing for speed, what else really did people expect him to do?
Point you're raising, excellent question. In fact, I wanted to ask Mike about it when he comes on. I don't know to his credit, even Jose Ortiz, when he got off the horse, he said he felt he ran a poor race. But the horse was keen. He broke well. Mike Smith very adroitly kind of kept him boxed in. I don't know what he could have done differently, you know, unless he just completely yanked him back. But it's evidently not where Chad Brown wanted the horse to be, but I really don't know what Jose Ortiz could have done differently.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see, and I could be wrong, but I don't believe a horse passed a leader in the stretch on the dirt the whole day.
Yeah.
And, I think the way that track was playing, if you gave Justify an uncontested lead, you clearly would have been running for second, you know, which there's something to be said for being second, but, I don't know if that's what everybody was there for. So I thought that criticism was a little unfair. I mean, of course, in the ideal world, you're not right on the top. But once he broke on top, I don't know what it was he could have done, as you said, other than a wrangle.
I fully agree with you. I think the only thing that could have saved Ortiz was if he was outside of Justify, but he wasn't. He was in the five. Ortiz, Justify was in the seven. There was nothing he could do.
Right, and for the fans, we should all be happy because it gave us the perfect race that everybody was looking for. I mean, it wasn't a matter of watching somebody go uncontested around the racetrack.
You had five horses within two lengths.
Right.
At the finish, I mean, Lone Sailor closed. He missed by a length and three quarters, two lengths. He was fifth.
Right. And now Justify's battle tested. You know, there's nobody can really complain that he got anything his own way, because clearly wasn't the case. Well, with that, it's 9 o'clock. Let's see if we can get Mike to tell us what he experienced and
yes,
shed some light on what went on back there in the fog.
Hello,
Mike. It's Bill Gottemer and Bob Santamays from Racetrackers. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations again on another top pair of wins. We haven't spoken since the Derby and the Preakness win, and now you're standing on a Triple Crown try, so congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
So much excitement about this horse from the very beginning, right? I mean, it's we've all heard of horses who've been hyped before their first start, and we've all seen horses people have known was good, but this he's lived up to every expectation at every turn, hasn't he?
He certainly has, and I'd have to say even more so. You know, he's just been incredible to do what he's done such a short amount of time in very few races. It's just a what can I say, man? It just kind of speaks for itself, you know.
We spoke a little earlier, and I know Bob has a few questions, but we spoke a little earlier. Even though he's won these last two races on the lead, he appears to be somewhat tractable. He seems to be to do what you ask him to. Are we viewing that correctly?
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, on top of his just all that natural ability he has a great disposition, a wonderful mind to go along with it, and man, he really listens to you, and then you could. I mean, I don't think you could take him, 10 lengths off the lead, by grabbing him. He's just so naturally, naturally just quick. High cruising speed just comes very, very easy to him. But he could sit off of somebody no problem if need be.
Mike, one of the things that Bill and I were discussing earlier that surprised some people was just how keen Good Magic was early and throughout the race. Did that surprise you, and did that cause you to change tactics at all when you saw Jose kind of really, hug in and go for the lead early?
I mean, early in the race, it surprised me that was him that was next to me. I actually thought it would be Quip, their other horse that was showing some
right.
speed, but it was Good Magic, I had to take a second look. It was pretty foggy. So when it was him, I knew it was going to be a battle from that moment on. And it was, I mean, he really took the race to him and tried to, wear us out and see if he could get the better of us. And so it was wonderful to see my horse, get into a dogfight like that and still prevail, which was pretty incredible.
Yeah, the Derby was about talent with this horse and ability. We felt the Preakness was about courage and guts. He took every shot from a really talented Good Magic and held off the closers. And I think it just sets him up perfectly for the Belmont.
Well, I certainly hoping the same thing, and it feels like it should, I mean, that's the kind of race he ran and his energy level came back to him really fast and really quick and so I look for him to jump back and with a little more time in between races, look for him to come back and run a big race.
Well, as the Belmont is the world unto its own, and we can speak about that at some point. That long backstretch when you look down, I guess it's been said that it confuses both horses and riders sometimes the first time they see it. It seems like you're running off into the abyss. But Saturday at Pimlico, I can tell you from a fan's point of view, watching it live, the fog almost made it surreal. It increased the suspense and increased the excitement maybe tenfold, just because there literally was a time where neither camera nor live eyes could see what was happening. And I'm assuming you heard the roar. Was the roar different that this time that you had to wait till it came out of the clouds, so to speak?
I don't think they roared until they could see him come out of the clouds, which was pretty
right.
pretty incredible. I mean, there was a movie script; you couldn't have wrote it any better.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. I was about the eighth ball and just peering into the darkness and trying to discern where you were. And I guess I view it a little differently than a lot of people. A lot of people thought that maybe the closers were gaining on you. I seem to think you were well in hand, and I did notice him jump over that tire track, and that track, I guess, was where the planks for people to go in and out of the infield was. Is that where he did that jump?
Yes, you're correct. And I thought that he was he held them off really at bay, and he held them off well, But again, the horses that closed with Tenfold and Bravazo, I mean, they ran big races, man. They came hard at us. They tried hard. But what was good about my horse was that once he did see him, I mean, he jumped right back into the bridle, and he was willing to go on if I need be. So, you know, I mean, you know, he ran his race to win. He got it done, and I thought they ran in, you know, very, very good races and running second and third. And good magic for running fourth. I mean, he was just right. It wasn't like he was that far behind us.
Right. That's not necessarily his style, and he gave it his all. And for racing fans, you know, someone putting a real challenge to you early, you know, makes the race that much more enjoyable. I want to speak a little bit. We don't want to keep you too long. You've been giving interviews all the time, and we appreciate you being on. I want to speak a little bit about the horse you rode for Bob Baffert in the prior race, Axeman. That was a tremendous effort by him in the Sir Barton.
Oh, it certainly was, and we got a lot of, you know, high expectations with him as well. So, you know, look for him the second part of this three-year-old season, you know. I mean, he's a horse that could jump up some of these spots and be one to reckon with.
Yeah, I thought that race was just tremendous. And again, it's a wealth of riches that Bob Baffert and you have there, so we'll keep them separated as long as possible. But, you know, just tremendous.
Yeah, and we got McKenzie coming back, so don't forget about him. You know, we got him coming back, and he's an extremely talented horse. I don't think we've seen the best of him as well. So we're very blessed right now in the Bob Baffert barn, I'll tell you that.
Excellent. You know, Mike, we want to speak a little bit about, and we're not going to keep you, but we spoke earlier on the show. Bob pointed out that the 14 post at the Derby tends to have trouble each year because the auxiliary gate is outside it, and in the scramble to get position, it seems that there's more room to kind of make a left hand turn into the 14 and 13. We're suggesting here that Churchill Downs invest in a gate that has 20 stalls. Has anybody ever discussed any of that, or did the riders feel
it would make more room on the racetrack? That big gap in between takes up a lot of room as well, you know. So it would certainly help the one horse out a whole lot, and the one and two and the 18 and you know the 19 and 20 horse. It would help everyone out a lot, I imagine.
Yeah, I don't know how much one of those could cost, but we'll start that from our humble beginnings here.
Yeah, we'll all pitch in. Yeah, maybe we'll all pitch in and see if we can get it done.
That's fun. Bob, I have a quick caller who wants to say hello, Mike, if you don't mind. This is a very special caller. She wants to congratulate you. She gave birth to me 59 years ago, and she's a big fan, and I'm going to give her the opportunity to congratulate you,
sure.
If that's okay.
I would love it.
Hello, Mom. Welcome to Racetrackers.
Hi, Bill. Thank you. How is it going? It sounds great so far.
Well, thank you.
And this is Mike Smith talking. Glad to meet
Mike.
You over the phone. How are you?
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Mike. Congratulations on your two most recent victories.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. Say a prayer for me for the last one.
Oh, I certainly will. I really enjoyed those races, and Saturday's race was thrilling. Oh, my gosh, trying to see the horses coming through the fog was really something, and hoping that you would emerge first was so exciting. You surely made Saturday evening really fine, really great.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it, and it was a fun race to be a part of. I'll tell you what, it'll go down in history, that race will.
Oh, I'm sure it will. Well, I enjoyed it so much, and I can't wait now for the Belmont Stakes, and certainly I'm wishing you so much good luck in that, and I'll be praying that you win. That'll be your first Triple Crown race, right?
Stakes trip. You got it. Thank you so much. Nice talking to you.
You're quite welcome. The same here. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Mike. Thank you so much. That's great. Bob, anything we've left unasked, and Mike, I guess you've taken a couple of days off, well-deserved rest. You're back in the saddle on Memorial Day, riding another horse for Bob Baffert. I guess is it a Lone Star this weekend?
On Sunday, then Memorial Day, I'll be back here to ride in Santa Anita.
All right. Okay. Good. So Sunday you'll be riding at Lone Star. Well, Bob, anything we forgot before we let Mike go?
I don't think so, Bill. Just to wish him best of luck and much congratulations again on winning the first two legs with great horse and great rider.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And
thanks, Mike. Mike Smith, everyone. Oh, that's fun. That was great. That was great. I knew my mom. I wanted to have my mom call in.
Yeah.
And participate. She's a loyal listener to the show, and that was great.
He seems to be
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Bill. I'm sorry.
No, I said he seemed to be amenable to the idea of a 20 stall starting gate. You know, which really is one of the ideas of our listener Jay Dollarskar. He just says he thinks it's just ridiculous that they need two gates for that race, and I tend to agree.
You know, you tension that the Derby gets, the money it generates, they might consider it, but I don't know. I'm sure there's some good reasons why they haven't done it, but, you know, I didn't think, but what Mike says, if it takes up so much room at that gap, just think of the added room it gives the one and two horses, because if you get the one hole, you are dead in the Derby, unless you have, you know, War Emblem or something flying out of there. So yeah, it might make it a lot better all the way around if they had a 20 horse gate, but who knows?
Yeah, well, we have a year. Everyone has to have a quest, so we have a year to kind of bring that up. We just have a caller who we lost. We had a caller from the 551 area code. I don't know who that was, but we could have taken that. I hadn't thought about Mackenzie coming back. I should have asked him when he's coming back, but. Talk about a world of talent in the 3-year-old ranks in that barn. That's crazy.
Well, yeah, Axeman looked really, really good. And again, he was early good speed on a speed favoring strip. But there's no doubt that horse has talent. And, you know, you'll probably see. Who knows? Maybe you'll see one in the Haskell, the other in the Jim Dandy, leading up to the Travers, and one will go in the Travers, the other maybe will go in the Pacific Classic. He's just completely loaded, Bob Baffert. It's unbelievable.
Right. It is just amazing. We have our caller back. Let's see who this is. This may be Jay. I don't know who it is, actually. But
Hello?
Welcome to Racetrackers. Hello?
Hey, you won a prize. You guessed the caller, buddy.
How are you
gentlemen? Good evening. How's everything? Great show with Mike Smith, by the way, guys.
Thank you. We're running with your idea, Jay, about trying to get Churchill Downs to buy a 20-stall starting gate. I think it was your idea originally, right?
I like that. Yeah, I like that. Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate that thought. Absolutely. Good question.
So what were your thoughts, Jay? Did you manage to get down to Baltimore?
No, I didn't get to Baltimore. I love Pimlico, and I got to get back here to Pimlico. Although it's in a just terrible neighborhood, but it's just the track is a dive. But I just love the track. It's just, you know, it's just a historic track. And I'm sure you guys have been hearing the rumors about Maryland. You know, Laurel trying to get it there. You know, like of course, Pimlico, if it stayed there, they're going to get like $350 million to try to like repair it, restore it, you know, but like it's interesting.
Yeah, I have fun there every year, and I like the history of it. I like the people.
It's
I like
great
the city.
History.
Yeah, and I love the history of it, but man, you can't see anything. The sight lines just don't exist, you know, even for the television cameras.
Larry did a great car. I mean, can you imagine? Well, you said it, like, but Larry did a great job calling, made that call, man. I mean, that had to be tough on Larry. What do you guys think?
Yeah, presumably. Now, the race after the, if that had been a half hour later, the race after the Preakness, there was one race that was run after the Preakness, and it was just a sprint race. But you literally couldn't see it even when they crossed the finish line. So that would have been really bad, because the fog for the Preakness added some excitement, but not being able to see it at all would have been really bad.
Thank God all the jockeys got safe at that last track and the prior races, because the racing had to go on, but thank God nobody got severely hurt, and stuff,
Jay, one thing we haven't spoken of, and I didn't want to speak to Mike Smith about it, or Joe Bravo, but, there was that jockeys action in New York two Saturdays ago where the jockeys are unhappy with having been promised a contract but haven't not received one yet or haven't finalized one yet, and they delayed the first race in New York by, I guess, what was like 40 minutes or so.
That's terrible. That's just terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just terrible. You think now that they'd get it right.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't portrayed as a strike. It was portrayed as a meeting that went long. But I think it was a shot across the bow, and I guess there's no more leverage to have than Belmont Day and a Triple Crown try, right? So I would hope they get that settled before.
I hope so, too. Now, getting to the Triple Crown, gentlemen, it would be a shame in my eyes. I know Winstar owns Audible, but it'd be a shame because I think Audible deserves the opportunity to run in the Belmont, considering the run that he put in the Derby. And, why not? I mean, if you looked at his last race, although that Winstar said that they're going to see how he trains, but the horse basically, when he trains, he's not like a stellar work type of horse. So I'm really intrigued to see how they're going to make that judgment on if Audible runs in the Belmont.
Yeah, I think, Bob, in a prior era, people would run their horse against other horses. As a matter of fact, we saw that. We saw that twice, right? We saw Angle Light defeat Secretariat in the Wood Memorial. And we saw Riva Ridge try Secretariat in the Marlboro Cup. So, there was a day when sportsmanship was kind of the mark word, and you wouldn't want a Triple Crown to be to be against anybody but the best who are available. Maybe they'll rethink it.
This might be a little bit higher stakes, Bill, than that, to win a Triple Crown. And on the radio in years past, Mike Francesa, who's in the business as well, has brought this point up. Would you want, if you owned Justified, would you want, now this wasn't an ownership question, this is more of a trainer question, would you want Bob Baffert entering another one of his horses into that race, running against your horse? Same concept,
right?
Here, similar concept.
No,
with that said, gentlemen, I mean, granted, Baffert is a Hall of Fame trainer, but hey, if it's a different owner, and he thinks that Justify is vulnerable, and he wants to enter the horse,
he's going
to
run him. Horse,
yeah, he's going to run him. What, hey, Bob?
Yeah.
I just feel like that Audible does deserve a shot, and hopefully he does get into the field.
The trainer wants to run him.
See, and that's why, if you notice, Vino Rosso is definitely going to run the Belmont because all the Winstar has a share in him, but they don't, I guess, with that horse, they don't have probably as much to really say, because I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think Rapoli and what's the other partner from Elijah's? Vinnie Viola. I think they probably own more. Perhaps it could be they probably own more than what Winstar owns in Vino Rosso.
There was a quote, Jay, and I forget when it exactly was, but when John Velazquez, somebody told me that when John Velazquez chose Vinny Rosso for the Derby, he was doing so with the Belmont in mind.
Okay.
They hoped they won the Derby, of course, but that the Belmont was really what they thought he was most cut out for. Todd Pletcher's, you know, record in the Belmont is tremendous. So,
he's had a lot of success.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Now, with that said, gentlemen, that you guys saw the Preakness, and obviously a handful spoke to Mike Smith. I think he was a tired horse because that finish line came up in time for him because those two horses, Bravado. I mean, I was hoping that Bravado would be the one that could actually pull that upset because I had Bravado in my tickets, but Bravado ran a hell of a race, and if you throw out his Louisiana Derby race, Bravado has not ran that bad of a race. And consider out of all the 3-year-olds, Bravado has ran the most races than any of these 3-year-olds.
Yeah, well, that's typical Wayne Lucas, right? You don't even bother asking him whether he's going to run. He just says yes.
No, but when you look at Bravado, I mean, hey, I thought Bravado ran a hell of a race. Hey, he ran in the Derby, and he finished sixth. He had trouble in the Derby, and to come back and run that performance, hey, you know, we don't see dead closers win the Belmont that far from where I'm at. But I tell you, I was very impressed with Bravado. I was. And Tenfold was a lightly raced horse, so he could bounce in the Belmont, but he was a very light race horse.
Well, you know what's been said that was incorrect? When you watch the gallop out, they keep saying how Bravado ran past, you know, galloped out with Justify. That's not true. That's Tenfold who gallops out with him. If you watch it again.
Yeah, it was Tenfold. Tenfold did.
Yeah, and once Justify saw him, he kind of took off again. I thought Bravado had a pretty good trip in the Preakness, and I thought if he couldn't get him then, he's not going to get him, you know. But who knows? You never want to knock a horse. I don't want to do that. But I thought Bravado had a pretty good stalking trip. I mean, I don't think we could have expected before the race, and Mike said as much, no one expected before the race that a horse as good as Good Magic would take it to Justify early.
Well, with that said, that's what as a player, you know, some people love small. Granted, it was in a small field, that small, like a 5-foot. But granted, like that's why sometimes I feel like at a 14 horse field, you know, you're not at that much of a mercy. But when it's like an 8 horse field, you know, so you're at a point of the mercy, you know, so. Because, like we know, he doesn't usually run that way. Is Good Magic, you know?
Right.
So, and you know, he was right there. And like, I watched the replay of that race, man. Mike Smith was so brilliant. You see, he did not give up his position. You know, he stayed right there on the outside path. And of course,
right.
And Good Magic was on the inside. You know, so
he had him boxed in the whole way around.
Yeah, he did not give up nothing. You see, and that's where the position. I think that's where Ortiz really wanted. That's where Good Magic would have wanted to be. You know, not on the inside.
Right.
But with that said, I'm gonna ask you guys the question because I'm gonna answer my own question after you guys answer. But do you think he's vulnerable? I mean, after, because remember, the Preakness was a shorter race than the Derby, and his speed figures are not going higher now. I mean, for people who go by speed figures, you know.
Right.
You know, guys, I think he's going to have a huge pace advantage in the Belmont. I saw a list of the horses entered that were possible entrants, and I think he's going to gallop on the lead. He's not going to be pressed, and he's just going to – it's going to be like American Pharoah. He's going to gallop all the way around.
So, my thing, you said it right. He's going to – there's no way he doesn't have the lead, yeah, because he is going to inherit the lead by himself with nobody – forcing him. We've seen horses before have that lead, and we know how grueling the Test of Champions can be, gentlemen.
Yes.
I mean, you know, so like, I mean, he don't take nothing away from him. He looks stellar, but time and time we've been down that road again. And I know a lot of people about want to see this happen. But, like, I mean, they think it would be tremendous for the game. But I'll be honest with you. I think he's going to get beaten at the Belmont. I don't know. You know, I think he's going to get beaten. I think just that stretch is going to finally, all those races, I think, could really finally catch up with him with that time span.
Well, you know, you're going to have a lot of factors, and it's hard to speculate right now, right? Right now, thing, I tend to agree with Bob that he's going to have a much easier pace trip than he had the last time. Mike Smith knows Belmont. Bob Baffert knows how to win the Belmont, so there's going to be no so I think it's only a Todd Pletcher horse will beat them, or maybe if Tenfold really comes back or matures. But I guess a lot depends on how we see Justify bounce back, right? And how hot the weather is between now and then. I mean, I think that's a big factor. You know, if he gets to train unimpaired between now and then, I think he'll be very tough. But if, on the other hand, we get 100-degree weather like we've done in some Belmonts, you know, maybe the racing catches up to him. But I don't know. That's just speculation.
So once the field rounds out, we'll know more or less. But I come. It'd be nice. I know a lot of people love to see Triple Crown, but not taking that away. But it would just be so soon, you know. Like, we waited for so long, but there was like in my eyes, gentlemen, I thought the horse that really could have like really got over that Triple Crown jinx. Unfortunately, the ill-fated Barbara.
Yep. Oh, Jay, did we lose you? Bob, we lost Jay. That's all right. He'll call back in, I guess. I mean, you know, it's right now. It's all kind of just talking in the air because you don't know how he's going to bounce back on it. I guess he went back to the racetrack today, and we'll know more in a week or so. I didn't prepare at all to talk about this week. I know there's a big card out in Santa Anita. I'm kind of horse raced out. I don't know about you. I'm going up to Vermont for a friend's wedding, and we're going to pay attention. My wife and I are going to pay attention to hiking and leaves and trees and stuff.
Very nice.
Shake my head for a couple of days, and you know we'll know more about it next week. But this has been a really good show, and I feel bad, Jay. Sorry we lost you there. I think we're ready to wrap it up tonight. Is there anything we forgot,
Bill? The only other thing I want to mention. A very good friend of mine, Phil Gleaves, is back training in New York after being in Florida for a long, long time.
Oh,
and he's got a horse in tomorrow in the second race, a maiden 2-year-old on the grass. And I just wanted to wish him the best of luck. He's a really good guy and a real good horseman. And I'm just going to be rooting for him hard tomorrow.
Oh, excellent. What is the horse's name? Do you have it?
Yes and Yes.
Okay, good. Excellent. Well, it'll be fun to see
Gleaves. Candy.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. But, well, that's good. We'll welcome him back. We'll have him on the show some night when he's ready.
Yes, yes.
This is a stellar show. Thanks to you and Jay, and thanks to Joe Bravo, and thanks to Mike Smith, and thanks to my mom for for calling into the show.
For sure.
A good show all around and a nice celebratory one. Everybody enjoy the 3-day weekend, and let's reconvene next week. Thanks, everyone.
Great, Bill. Thank you.